With tennis culture, it's a little bit more uppity. We're not going to invite you to play with us. If you haven't reached some level, we're not really interested in talking to you even, or maybe even looking at you. With pickleball, it's come one, come all. Oh, you didn't even bring a paddle? I've got an extra one. Here,
totally.
You don't know how to score? Let's hit the ball back and forth. Let's join our community.
Some of my first experiences were in Florida, walking up to people playing pickleball, and someone approached me and said, do you know how to do this? Do you want to join this group? Do you know the rules? We'll help you. And I thought, what in the world is this? Never saw that in the world of tennis, where you have to have the right clothes and the right equipment, or you can just stay over there.
Yeah, that got me really excited, just connecting with a whole different group of people. At that point, it was like, all right, am I a Christian bubble? How do I pop this thing?
Hi, I'm Steve. For nearly 30 years, I've been a pastor and disciple maker, and what I really love doing is helping guys be better followers of Christ and better leaders at home.
I'm Mark, a certified financial planner with an MBA and an Ivy League degree who wants to make sure you're making the smartest money decisions possible.
And this is Abraham's Wallet. Join us weekly and create a culture in your family of multi-generational prosperity, spiritually, relationally, physically, intellectually, and financially. Run your home, your dough, like a biblical boss. Joe, I'd like to begin today by talking about pickleball with you. Have you played lately? Are you playing anywhere?
I have been on the court more than anybody I know, just not with a paddle in my hand these days, which is quite tragic.
That's a fair statement. We're going to talk about your family business, which is in the pickleball world. How did you get into pickleball? What's your relationship with that scene?
My real background's in tennis. So I grew up playing tennis, played in high school, played in college. And then my full-time job was being a teaching pro at a local tennis club for few years.
Was that a passion of yours alone? Did it come from your parents? How did that work?
Yeah, well, this is bringing up some traumatic memories, Stephen. Uh-huh. I got cut from my ninth grade basketball team. Basketball is my first love. That's still probably my favorite sport.
Salute.
But I got cut. I had everybody else in my grade, this is how I frame it at least, everybody else in my grade had hit their growth spurt, and little Joey just hadn't quite grown into his full potential as a young basketball player. I was the only one cut. And so I started playing tennis. Wah, wah, wah. But tennis provided me all of the opportunities I never would have had if I would have stuck with basketball.
So you are a teaching pro.
Right.
Which is a pretty cool way to introduce yourself at parties, I have to say. Did you get a lot of ego boost out of saying that you're a tennis pro at a club?
I would have if I went to parties, but yes. Okay. Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
And then how did you transit? What happened? How did you go from that to I want to be part of the burgeoning world of pickleball?
So I taught tennis for 15 years in some capacity. It was always part-time, but I fumbled my way into, kind of just got dropped into a youth ministry world. And that's where God really captivated my heart for himself and
awesome
in ministry. And so my wife and I were a youth pastor team for 7 or 8 years. And then as we started having kids, everybody wants their tennis lessons evenings and weekends. It didn't make sense for family life. So I got out of teaching tennis. And then about 10 years into that, my doubles partner from college called me from Birmingham. I had not talked to him in close to a decade. And he said, I'm driving from Birmingham, Alabama to little Middletown, Ohio to play a pickleball tournament. And I need a doubles partner. Do you want to play?
Oh, my word.
And I was like, what in the world? And pickleball was something that is in our part of the country. If you do happen to know about what pickleball is, it's something you might have played one unit in gym class where they lower the badminton nets. And,
yes.
And so that was my experience. I was like, how do you play? Whatever. So we ended up playing this tournament. And I was shocked by the difference in the culture between pickleball and tennis. Tennis is, for lack of a better term, it's got a little bit more of an uppity vibe to it. So if you were like, I've got a tennis racket and I'm going to go out to the local park and I'm going to see if there's somebody to play tennis with. That doesn't happen. You don't walk out and there's two people playing and they're like, oh, you don't have anybody to play with? Come play. Yeah, that doesn't happen. But pickleball, it's, oh yeah, please come. We'll teach you. We'll spend the next 2 to 3 hours teaching you. Would you like a beer? Totally different vibe. And so at that tournament, I got my taste of that. And I was like, oh my gosh. And then on top of that, pickleball is just so much easier than tennis. So then the wheels started turning, like, hey, I'm out of my prime in tennis, 36 years old. Man, I think I could actually make a run at like enjoying this and feeling like some kind of athlete again. That got me really excited to play a different racket sport and even just connecting with a whole different group of people. If you know, at that point, it was like, all right, am I a Christian bubble? How do I pop this thing? Everywhere I look, I'm just hanging out with a bunch of Christians, which is beautiful. But what would it take to find a new network to see what I'm made of, in a sense, with what I'm talking about as far as what I need to do as a believer and really feel like I want to do? So this gave me a whole different world to go and explore.
Okay, so let's put a pin in the pickleball for a second and let's do talk about your marriage, okay, and what was happening in your life. So you're one of these freaks who married young and you married a best friend.
Yes. Yeah, very accurate. Yeah, we met when we were in kids' church. Our families went to the same church and we did the, I like you, check yes or no, yes, no, or maybe, that kind of thing in kids' church.
Yeah.
Everybody dated everybody in high school in the youth group.
Like, yeah, you got to go around the merry-go-round, sure.
Right, so we all made our rounds and then we really got pretty committed into high school and broke up for a couple years in college. And then, yeah, as soon as she graduated from college, we got married.
I have this working theory, which I just shared last night, so it's top of mind, that every relationship in maturity, God says the highest form of any relationship is friendship.
Yes.
So let's think about that. God says there's no greater love than the sacrifice that one makes for a friend, laying down your life for a friend. Similarly, he said to his disciples, I'm not calling you servants anymore. I'm elevating you to the status of, drum roll, friends.
Yeah.
And it always strikes me with couples like you guys, where there's a long-standing friendship there, that where marriage has complemented your friendship.
Absolutely.
And there are many marriages that never get to a place of friendship because it was about romance. It was about physical attraction, or we share interests, or what, or it's just convenient, whatever.
Right.
And I think it's just a great little side point to make here, that the best marriages are friendships. And if you don't spend time developing a friendship with your spouse, you certainly should. So now I'd like to bring these two worlds together. And I would like to ask you where your head was at when it came to like your career, say 5 years ago. What were you thinking?
Yeah, I was very lost. So I left vocational ministry for a number of reasons and found myself putting together a bunch of plastic pieces for IV pump replacement parts. Super exciting.
That old story, the transition from vocational ministry to IV plastic parts. We all have heard that one before.
Right, 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 right. So I was really confused. I just left a world where I felt like my skills were being most used. What do I do? I don't even know how to think about it. I'm so financially illiterate at this point. And so all these questions were stirring in my mind. And I was really trying to figure out three things at that point in my life. The first one was, yeah, I'm financially illiterate. So how do I fix that? At that point, I had two children. And I really felt pretty ill-equipped to be a dad. Like, how does this even work? I thought it was going to be a lot easier. Like, I thought it would be more intuitive, and it wasn't. So I was like, how do I fix that problem? And then all of these kind of church, faith questions that I was wrestling with. So there's three buckets of kind of money, fatherhood, and faith church stuff. And one thing about that job that I was working is it only required like 20% of my brain capacity. It was essentially just doing like it was the same vibe as like doing a puzzle. And I looked around and everybody had their headphones in most of the day. And so for the first 6 months, I'm like, I'll just jam and do my puzzle. And it started driving me insane. And I was like, I think I could actually go to school on any subject I want for 8 hours a day. So I could just hit all three of these things with podcasts and audiobooks. So that's what I did for 18 months. And so I just started researching through my headphones how to try to win in these three areas. I started with Dave Ramsey, and there's so many good things about that.
But I was give us the resource list.
Okay. On the fatherhood side, I was really into another podcast called Dad Tired that was really speaking to me where I was at, a guy named Jared Lopes. And then that's where I found you guys, was trying to, I found Abraham's wallet. I don't know what the timeline exactly was. And then let's see, on the church stuff, I was listening to all the letters to the church by Francis Chan was a big one at that point. Man, I'm drawing a blank on some of these other ones. But a lot of it was just podcasts and just going to a lot of, ooh, that sounds good. Let's go down the YouTube rabbit hole on that and just see what I could come up with. And about 18 months into that process, I was listening to one of those dad tired podcast episodes. And our mutual buddy, Jeremy Pryor, was a guest on this podcast. I had no idea who Jeremy was.
Okay.
And so he actually in 45 minutes, he hit all three of those topics in a very Jeremy Pryor way. I was hearing these things all put together and I was like, oh my gosh, who is this? And what is this? What do I do with this? And at the end of the podcast, he says, and we're doing this nonprofit in Cincinnati called 1,000 Houses. And I was like, Cincinnati, this guy's 20 minutes from my house. And so that sent me down a path to really seeking out different people who had won in these three areas in ways that I hadn't. And so I just was super hungry for, and you fall in that category as well.
And those three areas are home, business, and church life.
That's right.
Are you, I'm going to try to put some words in your mouth. Would you say that you're trying to formulate in your mind a new destination for the way that you want to father and lead a family that is distinct from the kind of family that you were raised in?
Yeah, in a lot of ways, yes. And because, I'll say this, because Caitlin and I, we knew that we were built to build some things that had some weight to them that were going to require a ton of work. And we knew that was possible somehow. I knew that God was calling us to that somehow. I just didn't know how to do it. And when I was looking around at some of the awesome families that we were surrounded by, I was like, I just think there's more in each of these areas that I haven't experienced yet. And I'm going to do whatever it takes to figure out, find some people that have gone further than what's in my current network, including my family.
So at some point, there is a wall of belief that starts to overtake you to go, it is not okay for me to stay here anymore.
I just got really aggressive with reaching out to people. If I got a whiff of somebody having something that I didn't have, it was, can I get coffee? I mean, I did it so clumsily too. There's the, can I offer you something so that you'll give me something? I tried all of that. I did it badly. But there, for me, there was just too much at stake, especially on the family side. When you have a child, all those things just come out of you. It's okay, we say that the youth group kids are our kids, but the moment you have a biological child, you're like, okay, I have a very unique set of responsibilities to this child, and yes, I see where this is going if I don't act, and it's not good. And I'll say this too, my parents, they really worked hard to advance my opportunities. They set me up for this, and I felt a responsibility as well, in a healthy way, I think, to say, thanks, Mom and Dad. You guys had to struggle, and I'm going to go do the things that you probably weren't able to do just because of your circumstances. So a lot of it was just a passing of the honoring the passing of the baton in some of those ways.
Yeah, let me soapbox for just a second. I want to get to, what did you do? Come on, tell us what you did. But just a soapbox for just a second. I was with a family this week. It's a young couple. They've been married a couple of years. They have dreams of having children, but they are willing to put it off indefinitely. And one of the lines I heard from them was, we have to get ourselves right before we would be willing to bring children into this mess. And that sounds very noble, but the truth is, and I would like to say this to everyone listening, God has physically set us up so that we would be attracted to another person. We would want to unite with them in marriage. We want to physically unite with them. And the result of that, the natural God-ordained result of that, is that you have children, and those children have a magical divine ability to put pressure on you that squeezes something particularly out of a father that has never been there before.
That's right.
So the kind of, Joe's kind of feeling like, I think I need to make a decision about my career. We'll see how it goes. Then there's this squeeze of these kids. You're like, I must do something immediately, because there's this God-given pressure. It's his will It's his way. And I would say to everybody, don't delay having children, because the having of children is part of God's plan to grow you up and to fix you. Yes, to fix you. And this couple that I'm referring to, they would say, what kind of weird pressure is that to put on a kid? Here you are in the world, fix us. It won't be the kids that fix you. It'll be God that fixes you, and he'll right. use the pressure of that scenario to deal with you. So,
yeah, so that's so well said. Yeah. We were just with a few families in Orlando that are all trying to grow in these ways. And Caitlin was sharing, we were kind of just each sharing some of our story. And Caitlin literally said the line, because we've been reflecting on our journey of the last couple of years. She said, honestly, this, I didn't feel dishonored. It was just so true. She said, honestly, I never believed that Joe could rise to the occasion, essentially, is what she said, in some of these areas as a father and trying to start a business and whatever. And I honestly, I just laughed at it, and because I didn't really feel that was true. That was true in my mind as well, unless I would have been forced somehow. And I think that is the tipping point, is where you have to, yeah, you have to really be honest with yourself and say, man, would I opt into a squeezing situation? And that's a really hard, because you don't, at that, when you're making that decision, you don't really know what's going to follow from that. So it's yes. a tough call. But what I was doing 5 years ago was I was seeing people that I was like, I think that guy's actually, when he was my age, I think he was wired the way I am. So how did he uh-huh. get to the point where he pushed past some of that passivity? And how did he, something had to have happened. And I think you're right. I think the something that happened oftentimes is children and the responsibility to provide for them.
So you decided to start a business.
I did. I certainly did, but uh-huh. I have never described myself or view myself as a natural entrepreneur. So as uh-huh. I started to find these guys that had started and grown businesses, sold businesses, I had this question in my mind of, do you have to be wired to be an entrepreneur? Or is there such thing as a learned entrepreneur? Is that even a category?
Great question.
That was so important for me to understand what the answer
Great
was.
Great question.
And so I basically came to a few of these guys and I said, look, that is my question. Will you hold my hand long enough? Do you trust that I'm not being passive here, just waiting for something to come to me? Do you trust that I'm going to take whatever energy, time you might invest in me? Do you trust that I'll do something with it? Because if you hold my hand for just long enough, if you just give that car a shove, I will be faithful to maintaining the car and steering it as best I can. So that was the path I started to go down. And so part of Jeremy and a couple other guys, the way they coached me was, you're going to help us with this nonprofit effort. And while that's happening, we are going to coach you in business. And so that's where pickleball comes back into the equation.
Tell us the story.
I had played that tournament. This is all the same timeline. We're catching back up to the pickleball timeline.
Yep.
So I was like, man, I know what it looks like to coach tennis. I did it on club. I did it on my own. So why don't I just start a pickleball coaching business? These guys were encouraging me to start a business. So I started teaching lessons on the side at parks and anywhere that people would have me, I would teach. And then it was like, oh man, this is a lot of time for my dollars. I'm not actually making great money here. It's all dependent on my time. So then I was like, ooh, what if I did like corporate events and we could like charge for the event instead of just charging per person or something? And so I started experimenting on the teaching side, and it wasn't working. It was a lot of great learning. And one thing that was a benefit was I started meeting the pickleball community as I started teaching lessons all over the city. And then I remember one particular conversation with one of these guys. I was explaining how I wasn't actually making money and this wasn't going to work. And they said, if you're going to do something in pickleball, you need to find something in the pickleball industry where a high enough transaction is happening in that world for you to become a piece of it. And it just so happens that I actually have a pickleball court that just got built in my backyard, said this mentor. And I was like, oh, that's cool. Good for you. I wish I had one. He said, I watched this process and this crew of guys that came in and built my court. It looks like the business is supporting 3 or 4 families at least. So it's a viable business. Like, why don't you just compete with those guys? And I remember at that point, I was like, dude, I have 0 construction background. I'm a country club tennis kid from Mason, Ohio. I don't know what a callus is apart from holding a tennis racket for like So that was,
wouldn't that be a physical labor?
Yes. So yeah, so I was like, man, that feels like an absolute non-starter. So I remember thinking that, okay, that seems like you're business-minded and good for you. That's a good idea. So I retreated back into my coaching business for a couple months. I was like, oh my gosh, this isn't working. And all that responsibility that I was feeling, that's eventually what won out. I have to figure this out for my family. I don't have a better idea. So what would it look like to go down this route? Like, how much construction knowledge do I really have to have? So I started thinking more positively about it. And what happened was I started to research. I was like, all right, if I were to be a court builder, what would that look like? And so I started researching paint, and I kept running into the same court builder who is my competitor. I kept running into him because he had exclusivity over some products I needed.
Okay. So
finally, I was like, all right, I keep running into this guy. I'm going to just ask him to lunch and just tell him that I want to start the same business. It was so naive the way I was approaching it. But for whatever reason, I'd say the reason is God's favor.
God's kindness.
This guy agreed to have lunch with me, this master court builder in our city. His name was Rusty. I said, Rusty, here's why I want to start a business. I didn't use like Christianese or whatever, but I was just like, we want to do good in the world. We want to have resources to do that. I want to leave something for my family. And he's an older guy. He's in his 60s, probably phasing out from his business at some point here. And he really was captivated. And he said, look, you have a massive gap, Joe, on the construction side. That is true. He said, but I also have a gap and I need another guy on my team this year. This was 3 years ago.
Okay.
And he said, what if you came and worked for me 2, 3, 4 days? We can work it out. I'll pay you and you can learn the hard skills. And if at the end of the summer, you want to start your own business, you are welcome to compete with us. There's more than enough market for both of us.
Holy cow.
And you would have my blessing. Then I was like, oh crap. I thought this was like just me being good about reaching out to somebody that knows something. Oh man, now I have an actual opportunity here. What do I do with that? And so that plan that he described is exactly what happened that summer. I almost quit about 5 times. It just sucked. A lot of it just sucked, honestly. But I made it through. I made it through. He was very faithful to me, and I was faithful to him. And I did my first job as our own company that fall and got one job in, and then it got too cold to work. But I did one job. It went pretty well. And then we hit the ground running the following year.
And you created a company called?
Your Court LLC.
Your Court. And so now your business is taking to either resurfacing something into a pickleball court or taking a naked slab and putting a pickleball court onto it. Is that right?
That's right. That's right. Yeah. So there's lots of different applications. There's the high school, there's the country club, there's the driveway, there's the random person that knocked a barn down and there's a concrete slab. Let's put some paint on there. And now more recently, we're really going for it and GCing all these jobs. So we're subbing out the concrete and the fencing.
Oh, wow.
Putting it all under our umbrella.
A growing industry?
a growing industry. Yes, Stephen. And you can imagine all of the dormant tennis courts that are in the local HOAs. And
they're all over the country.
They're just sitting there waiting to be used. And pickleball we're just riding the wave. And yeah, it's about as growing an industry as there is right now.
How many years did you have to go eating oatmeal and peanut butter?
As the business got started?
Yeah.
Yeah, we've been blessed. We didn't have to take any debt out. That first job, yeah, the way that it worked for us is it's very appropriate to ask for a 50% deposit. That gets you, the tools you need are minimal. You do have to get a little bit creative, but we did that. And yeah, we were in great shape. And like I said, we had a lot of mentors that were behind us that helped coach us through that transition process as well.
You were making good money the very first full year.
Yeah, easily double the highest income I had earned.
So there was no oatmeal year.
We'll say maybe 6 weeks to 2 months of oatmeal and peanut butter, which I love. Uh-huh. I have that combination often in the morning.
This is a former athlete who's no problem with that. But the thing that's interesting, and we found this when we interviewed another guy named Jeff Davenport that I just got off the phone with.
Yeah.
He started his own business. He worked for a company doing communication training. And he thought, I see how much money they make. I'm just going to try it on my own. And I guess we'll have to bootstrap. And there was no bootstrapping. He immediately just exploded and found himself on this new terrain he'd never been on before, which is right. Not only do I have a successful business, I'm asking myself questions about when do I hire?
Right.
Do I expand? How do I handle all of the wonderful harvest that's coming my way?
Right.
And you're growing up. So let me put some more words in your mouth and let you react to them.
Yeah.
He said, my self-image has radically transformed because I look in the mirror and go, I'm looking at a business leader who is employing other people. I'm turning a very good profit. I'm now in the negotiation business as a businessman, as opposed to, I was just wondering if maybe we could pour a pickleball court, sir.
Yes.
It changes the way that you view your family. When you sit down to dinner at night, you go, well, let's have some of what dad has provided for everybody. And there's this kind of, not in an overbearing way, but there's this, I feel the weight of my leadership in my home that I have the agency because, if I hope everybody understands what I mean when I say this, because you've earned it. Not because you went out there, you felt that pressure of, I've got a wife and kids that need someone to deliver. Then you went out and you delivered and you returned to your family and you go, there is a feeling of successful responsibility that I have. It changes the way that I see myself. It changes the way I present myself to my kids.
My wife too. We were driving to Orlando, the same trip I was just telling you about.
Yeah.
And I had to take a call and I had to explain to somebody, a customer, what the difference between putting asphalt down, reinforced concrete, and post-tension concrete. And I started going into all the details of concrete and asphalt. And I got off the phone and I just said, sorry about that, honey. And she's just looking at me like, who are you? That like,
so cool.
So that was probably maybe the biggest compliment I've had. And exactly what you're saying, my self-image has changed a lot. If I have a big vision that I feel like God has called us to run after, I don't feel the pressure to ask my friends and family to fund it. That's something that has really been exciting. And it's not I wouldn't invite my friends and family to be a part of it, but I no longer feel like it solely depends on that. And that's been such a blessing to be able to do that. And by the way, it should be said too, Stephen, and I think Jeff would say this too, is that none of this comes without a lot of stress.
Of course.
It is not all rosy. We had our fourth baby last year, right as my first full year. And I can't tell you how stressful it was and how challenging it was that entire year. And we're diving right back into it. It is worth it.
I have to tell people this little anecdote because it was so meaningful to me that the courts where I think we had gotten you down to Clear Creek to play.
That's where I learned. That's where my buddy from Birmingham, that's where he went and taught me before we played that first tournament.
Okay.
It's the first place I played pickleball. Yeah.
And that's where you have coached us. And I remember when you're starting up your court and you had put together some like hanging leaflets, like brochures.
Some door hangers that I just hung all over the fence and they're blowing off.
That's exactly right. So I remember being there with you and we're hanging up these door hangers. And the goal was somebody in this pickleball community will want a pickleball court on their own property.
Yeah.
Or at their business or something, and just get the name out there that we exist.
Right.
And I remember hanging those things at Clear Creek and then fast forward a year and you got the contract to resurface Clear Creek, the public park courts that we had always played on.
Yeah.
I just thought this is a very cool thing that God has done in your family. So cool. Now, I know that we say the pastures are quite green for pickleball where we stand right now. But let's say 5 years from now, the fad passes and there's a new hip sport and everyone's playing hi-alai or I don't know, something on gym surfaces or something.
Sure.
And the fad goes away. What's your confidence now to look, if I have to transition 10 years from now to a new thing, we'll figure that out. What do you, how do you feel about that?
Yeah, well, it's not going away. this isn't cornhole or something.
Sure.
It's too accessible to everyone. It's too much of a community builder. Watching entire clubs be built, multi-million-dollar facilities being built, I'm not worried about that. However, if let's say it did shut down, I've got enough confidence now to say, let's go figure out the next thing.
Do you think it's going to be an Olympic sport?
I don't know about Olympic sports. I'm talking to athletic directors about they see a wave coming of making it a high school sport. You know, the American Sport Builders Association conference, I'm going to nerd out here.
That's the American Sport Builders
Association. Okay. Yeah. That there is almost just overwhelm. Like they almost don't even know how to handle the amount of pickleball. I got four people calling me yesterday within 3 hours of people I've never heard of that just Googled pickleball courts in Cincinnati. And we are not unique. Cincinnati is not unique in that way.
Yeah. What's your website?
Our website is createyourcourt.com.
Well, I had this thought about you, Joe. It's an old favorite proverb of mine, Proverbs 22:29. You might know it. See a man skilled in his work, he will not stand before obscure men. He will stand before kings. And we have interviewed my brother-in-law before, who's a master plumber in El Paso.
Yeah, I remember that.
And that's all. I'm a plumber. And this guy is so outrageously successful. He is such a wonderful family leader. And it's not because he's, I don't know, writing pop songs. It's because he decided to be an awesome plumber.
Right.
And the Lord has blessed it because he's excellent in his work. And I'd see the same thing with you. Like you've taken this undertaking seriously. Maybe this is my thing. This is what the Lord has put my hands to. So I'm going to be skilled in this work. And here you are. You're not hanging bulletins anymore. People are coming out of the woodwork to find you. It's pretty amazing. You're a great dude to talk to, Joe. I appreciate you giving us some of your time. And I hope that you just represent hope to a lot of young men who might feel that they're in the same position you were in, which is going like, how do I provide for my family? Am I in a job that is really maximizing my capabilities? Am I stuck here forever? Do I just wait until a better paycheck comes along, et cetera? And you turn such a dramatic corner to just go for it and to be bold. And so I bless that in you. And I bless that thing that's maybe lying dormant in anybody that's listening. Do you have any final thoughts? You think if I could go back and speak to myself, if I'm talking to a thousand of myself, I would say this.
I am so grateful for the people who have done this for me. Right now, I'm coaching three other guys in how to start this business across the country. They actually are all believers. And I would love, genuinely love to talk to anybody. What doesn't have to be to get coaching for this, even this business. But I am so passionate about trying to spur guys on, anybody that feels, oh, that thing is dormant in me. Like I need to be awakened in some of these ways. I just want to be an encourager, because it is really hard to get going.
Sure.
You do need encouragement. And I had so much of that and so much life being spoken into me, because there's so much doubt. Again, like I'm not wired this way, or I don't have that unfair advantage and it's not going to happen for me. And I believe God loves me, but that's probably just not going to work out. It's something I want, but it's just probably not going to happen. I would just love to even grab 20 minutes and encourage somebody.
That's a very kind offer, Joe. I just bless your family with joy and bless you for giving us some of your time and wisdom, and bless you guys. Very exciting. Thanks,
man,
Joe.
Thank you, brother. Appreciate you.
Hey, if you liked this content, be sure to like it and subscribe and share it with somebody. And remember, no matter how you're doing and leading your family, God's love for you is huge. And his grace is
granted.